Welcome to the Pinstripe Ballet Podcast, where we're all reeling from the huge transaction news recently. As you all know, the Yankees recently let a player go who is very important to the organization, but we are confident that he'll work his way back on his feet. We are, of course, talking about Bruce Billings going back to Scranton today to make room for some tall guy from Arizona. What are your hot takes on this, Matt F. and Matt P.?
Gonna miss Bruce. He's a vital cog.
I mean, he was a big part of the no championship teams, and, you know, he was just a voice in the clubhouse, and everyone was just looking for him for guidance, and it appears his farewell tour has ended too soon.
Yeah, I heard he made a killer monkey bread too, and that's just a shame that it's going to be gone from the clubhouse now. But somehow,
don't worry, he left the recipe.
Oh, he left the recipe. That's good.
He done anything good, it could have been like Bruce Almighty jokes.
if this was a Reds Cup podcast, there definitely would be.
His monkey bread was above replacement level. He unfortunately was not.
But we are, of course, joking. The big news the weekend was Brandon McCarthy being traded to the Yankees in exchange for Vidal Nuño, which is pretty much an absolute steal for the Yankees, even though Nuño is being weird on Tuesday night and has thrown 7 shutout innings against the Marlins because baseball.
Should have kept,
indeed. But I think, speak for everyone on the site when we say that we were big fans of the trade, and obviously still are.
Absolutely.
McCarthy is not the most exciting guy in the world, but he has first half numbers that should stand to return to more normal figures than his 5.1 ERA indicates. And the Yankees acquired him for basically nothing, because they were getting nothing from Nuño. So they turned that into Brandon McCarthy and Kevin Towers, the Diamondbacks general manager, was kind enough to throw in $1 million just for the privilege of employing Nuño.
I've commented this before, but in the past year, Cashman has turned Nuño, Nunez, and Stewart into potentially useful pieces.
Yeah. And yet somehow people are like, he's got to go.
Well, I mean, the other two for Stewart and Nunez are potentially helpful pieces, but McCarthy's an actual useful piece. And
yeah.
It just boggles my mind that Nuño was a 48th round pick, junk balling lefty of the Washington Wild Things.
Yeah, they Yankees basically had that of indie ball.
Yeah. Basically through replacement level for 100 innings, and they turned him into a half season of Brandon McCarthy. Like, wow.
It's pretty mysterious, but, you know, I think it works out well.
Yeah, because, I mean, I know we had talked about Brandon McCarthy before, and it was brought up, and everyone was like, no. Because I think the assumption was that the Yankees were going to give up somebody.
Right, exactly.
Like a Peter. I felt like the deal would have been like Peter O'Brien for Brandon McCarthy or something of that nature.
Actually, yeah, that would have screamed Diamondbacks, considering how much they like Mark Trumbo. But
yeah, so something like that, and I think that people would have been completely opposed to that. But the fact is, they were getting someone who had no prospects, no chance for real growth, was completely replacement level, and mediocre. So they essentially got a complete net value and money.
Yeah.
And now they're only paying him, I think it's something like $2 million?
Something like that, yeah. It's a bit for the Yankees, that's chump change. I have to chime in that I did look up the two players the Yankees got for Stewart and Nunez, and Miguel Zulbarán, who they acquired for Nunez, has a 2.63 ERA and 3.17 FIP in Tampa, and Kyle Haynes, the reliever they got for Stewart, has a 3.86 ERA and 3.55 FIP for Tampa. So, like,
good for Tampa.
Yeah, good for Tampa, and good for Cashman on acquiring people with pulses that actually are not like huge prospects. It's kind of interesting. Silveron's only 20, actually.
Yeah, but, I mean, better than nothing for Nunez, who was giving you negative value.
Throwing Nunez onto the field was leading to a low replacement level crap.
Yes, Nunez should be paying the Yankees.
I still want Silveron to become a thing, get called up and, like, strike out Nunez four times in a game.
That's the American.
And wear number 26.
I like at the beginning of the season when Solarte just took the 26 right off Nunez's back. And it was really great. Ah, memories. That was another move that happened, I think, since our most recent podcast, because Solarte demoted in favor of Zealous Wheeler, because sadly, Solarte stopped hitting, and his numbers are just plummeting since basically the middle of May, and the Yankees understandably couldn't really stand to keep waiting around for him to figure it out. So send him down to AAA, call up Zealous Wheeler. He's not really the most exciting guy, but he can play a lot of positions and isn't really a bad defender. And, of course, baseball being baseball, he had a home run in his first career game.
Yep. Well, Solarte's kind of mashing in AAA, which is interesting.
Yeah, he's only been there for like a couple games, but he's been he's been getting almost every hit.
Yeah. So
maybe
it'd be interesting
maybe he'll find his way back.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see if he knocks on the door again, because he was hitting pretty well for a while.
Yeah, and it wasn't like he had like a whole bunch of bloops falling in too. He was hitting. Hitting balls hard.
It started in spring training, too. It wasn't like it started in the season. It wasn't like a Vernon Wells deal where it was like literally 1 month. It was like from April to like
basically
July.
Middle of May, yeah.
Middle of May and middle of May, June. So it was an extended period of time. So it would be interesting to see if he comes back. And hey, speaking of Nunez, he provided pretty much three more wins in value over Nunez. So there's that, too.
So, yeah, but we should probably explain why we're so optimistic on McCarthy, because obviously, as we mentioned, the traditional stats don't really look at his first half of the Diamondbacks favorably, but what he's been doing in Arizona is a formula that should lead to success, because he's been striking out 7.6 per 9, which is a good rate and above his career rate. He's only walking 1.6 per 9, so he's got good control, and he's not putting men on base. And the one bugaboo has been mainly seemed to be just the home run problems. And while, you know, Yankee Stadium is not going to help with all of that, he was giving up homers at a pretty unsustainable rate.
Yeah. So, yeah, his I think there was an article in Fangraphs about how his adjusted FIP for home run to fly ball ratio was something that wasn't sustainably going to have such a large difference between ERA and FIP. It just wasn't going to sustain. It's just not going to sustain itself. So you'd expect the difference to be much smaller in the second half of the year, just because it's more predictive. And I think there were a lot of people on Twitter and a lot of people on Facebook saying, yeah, but his ERA is so high and that's bad. And yeah, that isn't good, but there's a difference between what's a descriptive stat and what's a predictive stat. And ERA is descriptive, while something like FIP or XFIP is a little more predictive, because you can sort of extrapolate what's underlying his ERA. And I think the peripherals look good. He strikes at people, doesn't walk people, and has more ground balls. So,
and more on that home run per fly ball rate is right now from the season is 20%, which his career total is 10%. So.
And for reference, even when CC Sabathia was giving up home runs last year, I believe that was only about 15%. And that was, he was giving up a lot of home runs. So even that was less than what McCarthy's doing now.
He's 15 games under 500 for his career, though. I think the Yankees are doomed.
Absolutely.
3-10? What is this? Bush League?
Yeah, what were the A's doing getting some margin?
Oh yeah, it was that was another big deal in baseball over the weekend. That was I think it's a good move by the A's. I know it's just, I know we're getting away from the Yankees for a moment here, but I thought it was a good move by the A's, because this seems to be like the year they can really go for it. And while it sucks to give up a prospect as good as Addison Russell, they got not only Samardzija out of it, but they got a pretty good starter. They got almost the next best starter on the market in Jason Hamill. So they're going for it.
Yep, and that solidifies the rotation.
God, that rotation, I want no part of that. I think Greg mentioned that the Yankees don't play the A's again this year, and I think that's extremely good.
Yeah, because in a five-game series, you have no break.
No, it's... what is it? So it's Samardzija,
Sonny Gray,
Hamill, and... I know they demoted Tommy Malone, and he was pitching decently, because they just didn't have any more. They just didn't have room for him anymore. Hashtag Oakland A's problem. Can we take him?
Yeah, I want him. I'll take. I take Drew Pomeranz.
Yeah, Drew Pomeranz is good too. He's still in the rotation though, right? I think.
No, he's not actually. The rotation is Hamill, Kazmir, Samardzija, Chavez, and Gray.
I forgot about Kazmir. Yeah, Scott Kazmir.
Scott Kazmir,
really,
you know,
again,
with like an ERA of like 2.5.
Good luck with that, American League.
Yeah.
And I forgot they still have Jim Johnson.
Oh yeah.
They're like in almost their entire pitching staff has been above replacement level except for like Jim Johnson.
And that bad Nuno start in Oakland, Jim Johnson nearly got the Yankees back to that game.
He's very noble of him. He's throwing it back to his division series days.
Ooh, yeah.
Yes.
I forget. Yeah, I think someone mentioned Jason Hamill started, I believe, 2 games in that division series against the Yankees with the Orioles.
Yeah, I think the problem was that I think both of the starts were against CC back when CC was alive.
Yeah, and that's a pretty good segue into CC.
Yeah, it is. It's, you know, big. So their injury news over the weekend: CC made a rehab start in Trenton, I believe, and it seemed like the start was shaky, but you know, it's a rehab start. So he had to. So he woke up the next day, I guess, with soreness, and then it turned out that he was still in a lot of pain. And didn't he have to get he had fluid drained again or something like that?
Yeah,
he had fluid drained again, and then Joe Girardi said, yeah, I think it's fair to say that he's not going to pitch again this year.
Yeah.
And that he might need a microfracture knee surgery, which is just terrifying sounding.
Which is not only terrifying sounding, but it is terrifying. It's not like Tommy John surgery was an 80% recovery rate. Like, there isn't a very long history of players with microfracture surgery, and the players who do have microfracture surgery, the history isn't very good. And a lot of times that results in end of careers and knee replacements, and very rarely do players come back the same. And I think that there is the possibility that CC Sabathia will not pitch again. It is a possibility. Or if he does, he will not be good.
Yeah, and he can't even see Andrews and Dr. James Andrews until July 14th. So right now he's just kind of in limbo, and right now it's not looking very optimistic about, I mean, let alone seeing Sabathia effective again, about whether or not we'll even see CC again on a major league mound again, which would really be a sad ending to a really great career.
Yeah,
yep.
I mean, it was one of the... If you go back and you look at Yankee starters with at least like 600 innings, he was one of the best Yankee starters in a very, very long. I mean, he's up there with Messina and with Pettit in terms of just how good he was. I think if you look at pitchers who had at least 500 or 600 innings starters, he was third and fifth in Yankee history.
Yeah, and
so
I think it's a good parallel. If that does end up that his career is basically over, it's a good parallel to like Roy Halladay, because Halladay was like Cy Young winner just a few seasons back, was very good the next year, then fell off a cliff the next year, and now he's gone. It's
happened. It could be accurate. It happens. So I think it was fun while it lasted. And a lot of people ask questions, I guess, to address this one, is what would happen if he had to be deemed medically unable to play? And I think what I was reading was that he would be placed on the 60-day DL until the contract expired, and the Yankees would be recouped via insurance money.
Yeah, that's like what the Orioles had with Albert Bell when he had a career-ending hip surgery in, like, 2000. And, like, I think technically Bell was on the Orioles' payroll for, like, a few seasons more, but obviously they were recouping insurance money from it.
So, like, it still counts against the luxury tax, but the Yankees would get the money back, so it wouldn't influence how much they're going to spend, really.
Right.
Looking back on his Yankee career, if this is how it ends, it's just going to bum me out, especially considering that, of course, your, quote, average Yankee fan will probably remember him as the not great pitcher from the last two seasons, which is really unfair and sad.
Yeah. I think that in the near future, that's how people will remember him, but I think as you get more distance away from his career, I mean, you very rarely look at careers from a tail end. Like, people don't think of Babe Ruth in a Boston Braves or whatever, a Braves jersey and how bad he was the last season. Like, it kind of just gets those, like, memories of how bad someone is at the end of the career kind of just get melted away. And all you remember really are the highlights of the career. And I think people are going to remember a handful of things. People are going to remember him winning the World Series in 09. People are going to remember him pitching the ALDS in 2012. Like, highlights like those. More so than they're going to remember him being bad in 2013.
I guess, but I don't know. Yankees fans always worry me with that kind of stuff.
It's always the threat.
I mean, people were on, like, every pitcher. Like, every good pitcher. Like, people were on Messina. People were on Pettit at times. I remember when people were talking about how Mike Messina, like, was done. And, I mean, he ended his career very nicely. But even if he ended his career very, like, poorly, quote-unquote, as he did in his second to last year.
Yeah, if his career ended in 07.
Yeah. But his 2006, 2005 season was not good. Or not good for Messina standards, and people were questioning how good he was, and then he was finished, and then he had that last good season to end his career. But even if it ended poorly, I think people would still remember him as one of the better Yankee pitchers. So, as the more distance you get away from his career.
Well, another guy's career might very well be over as well. Perhaps more likely, though, is Alfonso Soriano, who the Yankees finally cut ties with over the weekend as part of the shakeup to bring in Brandon McCarthy and try to find some sort of production. Because it's sad to say, because Soriano was so amazing last year, but he was doing nothing. He was doing worse than Vernon Wells was last year. And the Yankees just couldn't keep gambling that maybe he'd find the hot streak again. Because at that point, he was just like a platoon DH who couldn't really play the outfield very well. So, you could tell Joe Girardi is kind of bummed, but I think everyone kind of understood, well, this just happens sometimes with really good players. Their skills can just disappear overnight.
Yeah, especially at that age.
It's another one that's just sad.
Yeah, and that picture was just,
But, just slinking away. I mean, it was kind of sad, but at the same time, not that sad. It was like slinking away into his town car in his $1,000 suit and his Louis Vuitton suitcase or something.
Yeah, he has like 150 million reasons to feel like, well, could be worse.
It's sad because, obviously no one wants to be told they can't play anymore, but not that sad because he's so rich. And he'll walk away with a very nice career. Actually, a very great career.
Mm-hmm.
Borderline Hall of Fame career.
Yeah. I don't know if I'd say
Not Hall. I don't believe Hall of Fame, but like that, it's that tier right below it.
He'll get some downvotes. If like JT Snow and I'm blanking on random players, but
Armando Benitez.
If JT Snow and Armando Benitez and like there was one really good example from a couple years back. Oh man. And it was from, like, a guy who's like, well, I promised him when I was a young writer that if he had a decent career, I'd give him a Hall of Fame vote regardless. And it was from someone who was, like, kind of terrible, but ended up on the Hall of Fame ballot anyway.
Well, Jock Jones out of vote this year.
Oh, Jock Jones. That's another good one. Yeah, Soriano will probably get some, like, lower than 5% votes for the Hall of Fame, but he was a lot of fun to watch. It's too bad it had to end this way, especially when it looked like he still had life left with the, 17 homers in, like, 60 games last year with the Yankees. And it's just like, well then, I guess we get you for 2014 too. This is great. And then it's like, oh, well, never mind.
Yeah.
When your one tool is hitting for power and you stop hitting for power, then all of a sudden your roster spot is just useless.
People complain that the reason why he wasn't hitting is because he was put into a platoon role, but he was hitting poorly for a long time prior to being put into a platoon role.
Right. And
people were saying, oh, but if he had more time to progress and to get comfortable, how long were they going to wait for him to get comfortable?
Right.
So, it had to happen.
David said he got a vote.
Well, that's a mystery. So we'll pour one out for Soriano, but it was time to move on, and maybe part of that moving on will involve Rob Refsnyder or Jose Perella, who have both seen time, or Refsnyder hasn't seen time in the outfield yet for AAA Scranton, but he was supposed to start a game in right field Tuesday night, but they were rained out, so that didn't end up happening. However, Cashman did mention that they were probably going to... That if he does make the majors sometime in the next few weeks, he'll probably be in the outfield, since Brian Roberts is doing a better job of covering second base than 40-year-old Ichiro is doing in right field, which is kind of... I have mixed feelings about it, because I do want Refsnyder to develop more at second base, because his bat could play a lot better there, but at the same time, the need for right field is a lot more pressing. But yeah. It would be nice if one of Refsnyder or Perella could solve that right field problem, because as we saw in 2013, the answer is not play Ichiro every day.
That's not the answer at all. But at the same time, Refsnyder's defense in right field is not going to be good.
It might be okay. I mean, he played there in college, and he hasn't played there in a while.
Yeah, I mean, that's talking how many years ago now?
Two.
Two? I mean, I don't know. He may need time to, like, get into a groove of playing the outfield before he's comfortable playing there again.
He might need time.
And I think playing a college right field is much different than playing right field at Yankee Stadium.
Is it? The fences are pretty short.
Yeah.
Here's what you're going to do, Rob. You're just going to stand there, cover your area, and let Ellsbury get anything close to you. But
his UZR isn't that good this year. He told me he wanted to boost it up, so just let him expand his range a little bit.
They're going to make a roster move sometime soon, regardless, because they do need to have someone on their bench who can play the outfield, because right now it's just Carlos Beltran can't play in the outfield right now, and your only other utility guys are Kelly Johnson and Dylan Wheeler, who are in a third base platoon of sorts right now. So, and neither is really an outfielder anyway. So, they're going to call up someone. It might just be Zoilo for all we know, but we'll see.
Yeah.
Pray for Refsnyder.
Whoever it is, it was worth cutting Soriano to try something new, because Soriano was just awful.
Yeah.
Some of the other injuries that were going on, we talked about CC before. Michael Pineda is throwing off. He's going to throw off a mound later this week, and they're hoping that he can join the rotation again by mid-August. Obviously, that's several weeks away at this point, and more than a month away. He still needs to go through the full rehab assignments, and he's already had a rehab stint shut down due to shoulder inflammation, but maybe we'll see Pineda again later this year. Would be nice.
Or next year.
He's gonna throw off a mound and then be diagnosed with the plague.
Oh, poor Michael. In the meantime, I guess, in the very meantime, it will be Shane Green covering that hypothetical rotation spot, because he pitched pretty well on his first career start in Cleveland on Monday night. So he earned the Saturday start against the Orioles over Chase Whitley, who has reverted back to the Chase Whitley that we expected. And so obviously we don't really know what to expect from Green, but we will go into him a little bit more later. And the other big Yankees news recently is the All-Stars were announced. Yankees have 3 All-Stars as of now. That's Jeter, who voted in, and Tanaka, and Dellin Betances. Very deserved All-Star selections for those pitchers. Tanaka has been absolutely terrific, even with Tuesday night's up-and-down performance. And Betances has been arguably the best reliever in baseball. So,
yeah.
Good work.
I've never felt so warm and fuzzy happy for someone as I did for Betances getting voted in.
Yeah, and he said that that was a personal goal of his entering the season. And, you know, I think it was longtime listeners, like, you know, a pretty remarkable turnaround for a guy who just, like, about 15 months ago was just a completely failed starter in AAA.
It's unbelievable.
And now he's striking out everyone and walking no one.
I'm still kind of upset that Chris Sale wasn't voted in.
Oh, yeah, that is.
And he had to be.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just like a travesty. I mean, like, I love that Dellin Betances getting in. I think he should. But I think it's also ridiculous that Chris Sale did not get in.
Yeah, I think there are people that I would quibble with before Dellin on
Yeah.
Like Burley. That's kind of silly. But I think Sale will eventually make it via, like, you know, random starter can't go for whatever reason. Hopefully. There's any justice. But I thought there might be an outside chance for maybe David Robertson or Jacoby Ellsbury or Brett Gardner to make the team. But I can understand they're not making it. I think the most likely person to have made it that didn't make it was Robertson. And even then, I can understand you only want to take so many relievers to an All-Star game.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the thing with Robertson is that his actual numbers are not as good as what his, like, peripherals are, because his peripherals are off the charts.
Right.
Because he has, like, 16.43 Ks per nine. But, like, his, you know, other numbers, like, he's a 2.93 ERA, which if someone's voting for that or someone's looking at that, they're going to be like, I'll take Uyahar instead.
Yeah, that one awful game against
the Yeah, just that one game.
Yeah, because he has a home run per fly ball ratio of 20%, which is, like, if you look through all the top relievers, it's, like, the only one that really sticks out.
Yeah, that's a bummer for D-Rob, but I think he'll make another one eventually.
Yep.
I thought Gardner would have been a nice dark horse candidate for the outfield, but I don't think the player's gonna be like, well, like, player voting, well, I heard that Brett Gardner has a really good WAR, so I'm gonna vote for him.
Yeah, you know, his total zone rating is just crazy.
this is just Brendan McCarthy's thoughts, but he saw the ballot probably. Actually, he probably voted in the National League since he came from the Diamondbacks.
That's true, and I'm sure he did look at that stuff while he was voting.
Yeah, or maybe Zach Greinke was like, Guy, this guy's XFIP could be better.
Yeah, he's not really. He's just a Sierra underperformer.
And teammate's like, what? Sierra Nevada? Sure, I could go for one.
Teammates yelled geek and shoved him to the locker.
Yep. That'll probably about do it for the general topics. Do you guys have anything else?
No. We can move on.
Okay. We'll move on to the tweet bag. We have a few tweet bag questions today. On Twitter, we have from... We're just going to call him Frank, because that's what his display name is. So, from Frank, any chance Yankees make just small moves this month in hopes of saving their big prospects for a Tulo trade over the winter? I would love to see Troy Tulowitzki on the Yankees. Unfortunately, I don't think that's going to happen, because he's like the center of the Rockies franchise right now.
It's not. I think... If this is floating around, I think Yankee fans should just like put it to bed. Like, the Yankees are not going to get Troy Tulowitzki, because if they're going to offload him somewhere, there are other teams that would take him, A, and B, would have enough prospects to be able to give a fair package in return. I mean, the Rockies aren't going to give away, the most legendary Rockies player since Larry Walker for Luis Severino, Gary Sanchez.
Yeah,
this is not going to happen.
I think it's just the new trade for Felix.
Or trade for Pujols.
Yeah.
Pujols, can we get him? Too low, can we get him? Or trade for Giancarlo Stanton.
Yeah, I've been seeing that a lot lately.
But it would be nice, but I don't think the Rockies would... First of all, I don't think the Rockies would move too low. Second of all, I don't think the Rockies, as you said, would move into the Yankees, because the Yankees don't have the prospects. Remember, this is the same team that was like wanted the Yankees to basically clear out the farm for Ubaldo Jimenez a couple years ago, and they're like,
yep.
I think they asked for like Manny Benuelos, Jesus Montero, and several others. While these guys,
and it was Betances.
Oh yeah,
and Nova.
Betances, Nova. All these guys, all while they were like at the height of their prospect levels, basically. So,
yeah,
I don't think that a trade would get done. I do think there's a chance the Yankees only make small moves this month, though. The first half of that question, I agree with. I don't really see them making a huge splash.
No, and I don't think that's a big deal. If they acquire two or three players in total that give them a half win or one win advantage, that's the equivalent of getting one solid player.
Right.
I think that's the plan. Let's put it this way. Cashman already got Brandon McCarthy for nothing. That gives him an extra half win to one win. If he acquired another win, that would be the equivalent of getting David Price.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's kind of what they're looking at, is get something that gives them a small advantage, or a couple of small advantages.
Yep. Okay, the next question, from Bama960. If Whitley is running out of innings, what is the best course of action? 2 to 3 innings per week for the rest of the year, or pitch maximum and shut down in September? I think... moving him to the bullpen right now, it was the right move. I think they might have been planning that regardless, even if Green was rocky in his start the other day, just because he's already pitched as many innings this year as he did in all of last year, because, you know, he was a reliever for pretty much all of the year until late August or so. So he's already at his innings limit, or not necessarily his innings limit. He's already at the innings he reached last year, so... I think, you know, he's not going to make any... I don't think he'll be making too many more starts, so I think that's how you limit his innings, make him the long reliever or whatever.
Yeah.
Yep.
Like get rid of David Huff and use him instead.
Yeah. Well, I guess that would happen if... they have both Huff and Whitley in the bullpen now, which is all right, so...
Yeah.
They have another expendable guy in Jim Miller. The legend.
Sporkle quiz fame, yep. Jim Miller.
Hashtag Miller time.
Jim, Sporkle answer, Miller.
He is the angriest looking man. Okay, next question from Mike Wingo. What is the best trade package to acquire Adrian Beltre without giving up top prospects Gary Sanchez, Luis Severino, Peter O'Brien, Aaron Judge, Eric Jagielo, and Greg Bird. I don't think you're going to get Adrian Beltre without including at
least... there is one?
I don't think you're going to be able to get Adrian Beltre without trading a couple of those guys. And
yeah,
we even know that like Beltre Judge. Is for sale anyway.
I mean, I think it's pretty well known that Severino is a top 50 talent. And I think in Baseball American Baseball Prospectus, Severino was established as the Yankees' top prospect. So if there's a package and the Yankees have to include a prospect, Severino's got to be in there.
Yeah.
Sanchez is kind of falling a little bit, especially his quote-unquote attitude problems, but he's still got talent. So a package for Beltre would have to include probably Severino and Sanchez, or Severino and Judge.
Yeah, because Judge is a rising talent, so he's destroying the ball in Charleston and Tampa. Or he did destroy the ball in Charleston, and he's continued to destroy it in Tampa. So I think that'd be like way at the start. I don't see why the Rangers would accept like, oh, here's Mason Williams and
Brady Lale.
Brady Lale.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't think Peter O'Brien really belongs in that group that he mentioned either. As much as I enjoy Peter O'Brien's 28 dingers this year, he doesn't walk.
See, he's possibly a top 100 prospect. Like he's on the cusp, I think. But again, it's on a one tool basis.
Yes.
So I think that teams will be really wary to add him. Because, yeah, he could just be Russell Brennan 2.0.
Right. That might be his peak.
Yeah.
He might be lucky to be Russell Brennan 2.0. So, Mike Wingo also asked another question. Is it possible for the Yankees to trade Severino, Sanchez, O'Brien, Banuelos, and a lower prospect to get David Price?
Basically, if they want David Price, they would need to include all of them.
Yeah, I think he was saying trade all of them and a lower prospect to get Price.
It's close. I mean, the thing is, if you look at, like, it took Addison Russell to get Hamill and Samardzija.
Right.
And, so to get David Price, it's going to take something of similar value, probably more.
Right. I think that is giving up a lot, and I don't know that. I don't even know if the Rays would accept it, just because it doesn't seem like enough. I know it is a lot, but it doesn't seem like enough, just because Price is like a Cy Young caliber pitcher that you'd control for a year and a half. And again, they'd be trading it within the division, and I don't really think that Andrew Friedman is in the business of helping the Yankees.
Yeah. So, basically, an ideal trade for David Price would look something like this. David Price would be traded to, say, the St. Louis Cardinals for Oscar Tavares. That would be like the type of trade. It would have to be a blockbuster.
I think Oscar Tavares would just have to be the starting point, too.
Yeah, and it would have to be like Oscar Tavares and possibly somebody else. Maybe a couple of mid-level prospects. They'd have to eat money. They would have to do a bunch of other things, but Tavares would be like the baseline to get the discussion started.
Yeah, I just don't think a trade for some of these big names is in the cards for the Yankees, just because they don't have enough like big prospects to really get people's attention.
I'm more interested in guys who are maybe underperforming where the Yankees can sell can buy low.
Yeah.
Than more so trying to get these guys who are sell high candidates, because the Rays are looking for something like a Will Myers, James Shields trade.
Yeah.
That's what they're looking for. They want like a slam dunk prospect, like a Tavares, for someone like Price, where they can easily make a return.
And David Price is a much better pitcher than James Shields was, too.
Yeah, I think Shields, they got an extra year, is that correct?
Yeah, that's right. At that point, Shields did have 2 years of control left. So that would probably be up for it. But yeah, Will Myers, top prospect. Oh yeah, Wade Davis too.
Oh. So it's going to be some. The Yankees could get someone like an Ian Kennedy. That's not out of their range.
Possibly, yeah. That would be kind of weird, but so. Also, more in the tweet bag, we have this question. It said, please go over what it would take to land targets in their likelihood. He mentions Cliff Lee, Justin Masterson, Clayton Kershaw. That's ridiculous. Beltre, etc. And also share any players you think Cashman should pursue. I actually think Trevor Plouffe might be a good fit. The Twins probably won't need him in a year or two with Miguel Sano around the corner. And he is very versatile. He has 27 doubles, though his OBP and ISO are down. And he is right-handed power bat. He could fill in at third, first, right, left, and even shortstop, apparently. So second shouldn't be too hard for him either. Just a thought. Well, Kershaw, that I don't know why he's on here. Because Dodgers are contending.
Yeah.
Kershaw is Kershaw. So... that's not happening. Beltre, we went over. Cliff Lee. Some people are really high on Cliff Lee, and I am definitely not one of those people. I understand that Cliff Lee is a really good pitcher, but there's just so much money left on that contract, and he's having injury problems this year, too. And I just feel like Yankees' answer to this problem is not acquire another old guy who's hurt.
And it's, like, probably one of the worst contracts in baseball. Like, it's up there. It's pretty horrible.
Yeah.
There's, like, there's only downside to that contract.
Yeah. Like, maybe he could be good still. And there's still a decent chance for that. But, you know, I just don't see it happening. If it didn't happen, like, 4 years ago, when the Yankees had Jesus Montero, who was one of the like top five prospects in baseball, then I don't think it's gonna happen now.
Yeah.
Masterson, have you seen that guy? I don't want that.
I mean, it would be a rental for like a pretty pitcher.
Yeah, the Yankees just spent the other day pummeling him, and I think he went on the DL right afterward.
Yeah. So, I mean, if he's on the 15-day DL, there's a possibility he couldn't even be traded for. Because I don't think you could trade for someone who's on the disabled list anyway.
Yeah, you can. The Rays did that with... they acquired Jesse Crane last year. He never pitched for them.
Well, I don't know if you'd want to trade somebody who's hurt at the moment anyway.
No, yeah, it seems unless like... unless you really want to. Oh, he was put on the DL with a right knee injury, so...
Yeah.
Yankees have their fill with knee problems right now between Sabathia and Carlos Beltran, so.
And Mark Scherer.
Oh yeah, Scherer too. His baby knee. He also asked about Trevor Plouffe. I don't know. I don't think the Twins would give him away that for like a very low cost, because I know Sano is around the corner, but Sano also just had Tommy John surgery. That's
yeah.
While it's not as long a recovery time for position players as it is for pitchers, it's still going to keep him out for a while.
Yeah, and he's still a decent utility player regardless. Like, they still could use him even if Sano's playing.
Yeah, and I'm looking at his numbers now. They're okay. It's a 101 WRC+, 1.2 WAR in 72 games. Last year, he was... just a little bit above replacement level in 129 games.
He's not much better than a Kelly Johnson.
No, yeah, I think you're right. He doesn't really seem too much better. Maybe he would be an interesting bench guy just to have around. I think the Yankees don't have many, as this guy mentioned, the Yankees don't really have many versatile guys on the bench. So maybe if they could acquire him for something low, then it can't hurt. Like, it'd be an addition kind of like an Eric Hinsky, Jerry Hairston in 2009.
I know one that I read that was interesting that could be an interesting fit is a Josh Willingham that I was reading about. Mm-hmm. And Willingham is putting up decent numbers. He's hitting pretty well. And I know the Twins Daily, I think it was the SB Nation Twins blog, was posting something how the Yankees had a moderate fit for Willingham, an above average right fielder in terms of hitting. Could maybe platoon, maybe play part-time, but could maybe add a half a win, like that type of little advantage you can get.
Mm-hmm.
So that's it's. I think that'd be more probable than someone like Someone like Proof, who's more of a utility player.
Yeah, and I think Willingham's going to be a free agent after the season anyway.
Yeah, yeah.
So he'd be a rental guy, and again, that might be that maybe that would solve your right field problem if the Yankees are reluctant to turn to like a Ref Snyder or Perella. Rizzolo.
Yeah, and you probably wouldn't have to give up much for him, to be honest.
Yeah,
the Yankees would gladly eat the rest of the contract, and they probably wouldn't have to give up anything crazy.
They might have to give up. They probably have to give up a little bit more than they had to give up for like Soriano, just because Willingham's only owed through the rest of this year, and it's only like $3.5 million at this point. So,
yeah,
maybe that could be an interesting person.
Yep.
Another question from the tweet bag. Do you think it was a mistake signing Carlos Beltran in light of Curtis Granderson's success at the Mets this year? I know it's early, but it's not exactly an auspicious start.
Yeah.
Here's the thing with Curtis Granderson. I was a fan of Curtis Granderson. A lot of people in New York were not fans of Curtis Granderson because of the strikeouts. And you know that even if he was doing exactly what he was doing, or what he's doing right now with the Mets, people would be like, oh, yeah, he's got those home runs, but what about the 84 strikeouts in 86 games?
Yeah.
So I think this is just Curtis Granderson is obviously doing a lot better than Carlos Beltran right now, and at the moment, his contract is looking better than Beltran's, but I will also say that I don't think Yankees fans would be happy with Granderson.
No.
No.
They never were, except for the 1 year.
People were complaining when Curtis Granderson hit 41 home runs in 2011.
I think it was more the next year in 2012 when they were really complaining, because at least in 2011 he was like MVP candidate. But
he was still hitting 40, almost 45 home runs.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, he had 41 home runs in 2011, then 43 in 2012, but he was even more then, and kind of slumped in the second half, and people were like, oh, he's terrible. Maybe they shouldn't even offer him a 2013 contract, even though he had 43 homers.
Yeah. So, I think the key thing is, I'll put it in two different ways. Yes, I think that Carlos Beltran's contract is not good. I didn't think it was good when they signed him. I don't think it's good now. And I think especially now, where most of his value was supposed to be this year, this was supposed to be the best year of the contract, and it's already kind of gone. The value is pretty much gone out of that contract. But I don't think the Curtis Granderson contract would have been better, because that was $60 million opposed to $45 million, and it was also 4 years long instead of 3 years long. And Granderson will probably not be good in 2 years from now.
Yeah, he might struggle very next year, too, which would be like just adding another year onto the Carlos Beltran deal. So.
Yeah. And it could end up being like a Soriano type thing where like once his power is gone, he's just striking out.
Yep.
In 2012, he struck out 195 times for the Yankees.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think that signing Carlos Beltran was the answer, but I don't think that Curtis Granderson was the better alternative.
Right. It's like picking between the lesser of two evils.
Yeah, but they didn't have to choose either of them.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah, you didn't have to. Okay, next question. Last question from QM Barry, Shane Green. Shane Green was great in his first MLB start on Monday night. What really impressed me was his ability to throw up to 96 miles per hour and get a ton of groundouts with the sinker. He seems like he could find a home in the rotation. Could he stay up with New York as a legit piece, or is he a career minor leaguer? I was amused at first because I read this at first and it's like his ability to throw up at 96 miles an hour. Watch out for Shane Green projectile vomiting.
Too much Bruce Billings monkey bread.
Dangerous projectile vomit.
Too much Bruce Billings monkey bread, yeah. Matt P. looked up some information, some more information on Green that we could talk about.
Sure. So, the Baseball America scouting report kind of just says the following. Green has an opportunity to seize if he can offer even a league average number five starter caliber performance. Green has deception in his delivery that could help his tick above average fastball. And then they said something about how his low home run rate has helped diffuse his ERA somewhat. He features a three-pitch mix that includes a 90-94-mile-per-hour fastball with a good angle from his crossfire delivery, a plus slider, and a developing changeup. So basically, the scouting report on him is basically that he's got a couple of above-average-to-average pitches and a changeup that's not really there yet. So the profile is kind of okay. And his statistical analysis isn't as encouraging really at all. If you look at Percota projections, his projections for the season basically says that the only way he would provide above replacement level performance is if he performed in the 90th percentile. And that would give him an ERA of 4.59 and a FIP of 4.99. And Steamer basically says that he will have like a FIP around 5 and an ERA around 5 and change with basically replacement level report performance. So basically, the scouting report says that he's got a chance to improve if he improves upon his control and his mechanics and he develops his third pitch and his changeup. And basically, his minor league profile basically just says he's probably a replacement level. Like, that's what it looks like. Probably better than Nuno, but still probably close to replacement level.
Mm-hmm. He certainly has more potential, I think, to be at least an interesting
guy. He has more upside. He has more upside because he has a chance to develop. Nuno's more of a finished product.
Right, I think like the David Phelps might be what Green's peak could be.
Yeah.
And it's not like Phelps is bad. It's not really exciting, but, you know, you need your David Phelps on your team, so.
Yep.
And if he can give the Yankees replacement level innings while they search for a starter who could hold the fort more legitimately, then all power to him. Okay, so that'll do it for the tweet bag. The next segment, Matt F. has looked up some stuff on the Baseball Reference Play Index, so I'll turn it over to him.
Okay, so I know at least the three of us, and hopefully a lot of you out there, listen to the Effectively Wild podcast.
Yes.
Yep.
And once a week they do a segment where they go through Play Index, and I just wanted to do something kind of similar, but with the Yankees theme. So for this week, what I've done is I've looked up, it's a basic one to start with. I'll probably get a little weirder as time goes on. But this one, I've looked up the worst Yankees game scores of all time.
Excellent.
So I'll just run through the top five. In fifth, there's actually a three-way tie between Andy Pettit, Steve Sundra, and Johnny Broacca with a game score of 1.
Ooh. What did Andy Pettit do? God.
It was 96, April of 96. It was actually a game Yankees ended up winning, 13-10. But he went one inning, allowing 9 runs, 8 earned on 8 hits.
Well.
Yep. The other two were both from the 30s.
Yeah, that surprises me that Andy Pettit put up a clunker that bad. That's worse than anything Mitre ever did.
Mitre is in a tie for 15th with his worst, which was a 4.
Wasn't Nuno's earlier this year like a 7 or a 12 or something?
Whitley had a 5.
Maybe that was the one I was thinking of.
Don't see Nuno after this. Not scrolling down that far. Okay. In 4th place from 1988 is Charles Hudson, who had a negative 2. He went 1.1 inning, allowing 9 runs on 10 hits.
Nice.
In third is a El Duque start at minus 3. He went 3.1 innings, but allowed 10 runs.
When was that?
98. It was against the Angels.
Wow, that was when he was, like, doing relatively well as a rookie, too. I guess that was just one of those games when he's just like, nah.
Then number two, we have a 1997 start from David Wells.
Huh.
It's pretty similar to Aldute's, where he went three innings, allowing 11 runs on 10 hits. His was game score was a -5.
Taking one for the team.
But number one is easily the best, and it's also the funniest because it can only have happened in old-timey baseball, is Carl Mays from 1923, who had a game score of -12. And here's how he did it. He pitched 8 innings. He allowed 13 runs on 20 hits.
20 hits. Yeah, Carl, you're fine.
He walked 4 and struck out 2.
Well, that's, his strikeout for walk ratio is going in the wrong direction.
I wonder how many pitches he threw in that game.
All the pitches, probably.
Yeah,
the game must have been so long.
Well, his... I remember I did a biography piece on Carl Mays once, and I don't think his career lasted very long after that, so...
Okay, the game time was 2 hours 10 minutes.
They're just like, oh, no hit, alright, let's go.
That's because there were, like, no breaks in between the innings and whatever.
Yeah, they're just like...
The Yankees got 4 hits.
Well, that's not how you do it.
Carl Mays did manage to pick up one of the Yankees' 4 hits that day, so good for him.
Oh, well, you know, he contributed. That is impressively awful. I just can't even fathom the idea of a guy standing out there for 20 hits and just the manager being like, yeah, soak up those innings, Carl. You're pitching again in 2 days, probably.
Yeah, probably threw like 600 innings that year.
No, I think he was terrible that year, so he didn't pitch that many.
In 1923, he only pitched 81 innings, yeah.
Well, so that was like 10% right there in one game.
Yep.
I'm going to go out on a limb and predict that his ERA was terrible.
It would be a 6.20.
Nice. Chris, I wonder what it would be like without that game. Probably.
I don't know, but it was impressive. He gave up 13.2 hits per 9.
Ooh, that is... Yikes.
3 years later, he got MVP votes, so...
Doing it right?
With the Reds, though.
So. Is that all you had?
Oh, yeah, that's it.
Okay.
Yeah, in future, Rich will probably try to get weirder, but... I couldn't ignore the... amazing 8 innings, 20 hits performance.
No, I don't think anyone could. I mean, that's just... outstanding. Even me, Trey, is like trying to stand and applaud for that. Speaking of me, Trey, that provides a nice segue to the Yankee and the me, Trey of the week. All right, Matt F., your Yankee of the week.
Okay, well, I'm going to pick the one-time-only Ryan Roberts,
ooh,
who has a WRC plus of 186 for the past week.
Elusive.
Yeah, this probably be the only time, but...
Well, he did have that one game where he got 3 doubles and a triple.
Yeah, no, he's had a decent week.
I can't believe
I don't expect
happened.
Him to have more, but...
I can't believe that one 4-hit game happened. I can't believe he didn't break from running around the bases so much.
Yeah.
He has been stunningly
healthy. I don't... Yeah, it's weird. I don't expect we'll see more of this, but for 1 week, I'll throw him a bone.
That's fair. All right, Matt P., your Yankee of the week.
I think I'm going to have to go with Brett Gardner. Because Gardner has been on fire.
He has.
He has been really good pretty much all year, but especially in the past week. I'm going to see what his numbers were. In the past week, he put up a 170 WRC plus in the past week. A triple, a homer, 4 runs scored, 4 RBIs. he's been tearing it up. And he's been playing great defense. And he's been stealing bases. So pretty much everything you could ask for. And to think, we could have had Brandon Phillips for him.
Brandon Phillips, who I believe is basically doing around the same thing as Brian Roberts right now.
Yeah, essentially, yeah.
Except for, like, $40 million more, at least.
And if he went to the Yankees, he would have asked for more money.
Oh, yes. Like, yes, I'll need a new contract extension. But I'm lovable. I'm that dude. Harold Reynolds is my agent.
I yell at beat writers.
Yes. My God, I remember that last year.
Yes. He currently has a war of one.
Well.
Good job, Brandon.
And he is batting .216. He is batting 92 WRC plus, which is pretty much the same as Brian Roberts.
Yeah, that is. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, but how many RBIs does he have?
He has 38. So
there's the value.
Now that I think about it, I think I would pick Brandon Phillips as my MVP. Harold Reynolds.
That man is going to be calling the World Series.
And the All-Star game, I think.
Oh,
so much gold.
Yeah.
So much gold.
So, my Yankee of the Week. Hasn't been too much going on exciting over the past week. I'm feeling comfortable giving this to Dellen, because Dellen is Dellen. I'll co-give it to Dellen and D-Rob, because combined they've been pretty tremendous, as they have been all year long. Dellen's thrown 4 1/3 innings of 2.08 ERA baseball, and D-Rob's thrown 3 innings of 3 ERA, and they've combined for the 4 saves, which is useful, and they haven't walked a batter, and they've struck out pretty much everyone. So, good work, back end of the bullpen.
Robertson's FIP, -1.22.
Yes. That'll happen. The BABIP is 800, so he's doing a good job of playing. Obviously, this is only in, like, 3 innings, but it's still amusing. So, good work, D-Rob and Dellen. Keep it going. And I'm really hoping that Dellen does not appear in the All-Star game, just so that he could save him an inning or two. So I feel like he might, and he might enjoy it. So.
Yeah, it's a weird thing where I'd like to see it, but I also don't want to see it.
Yeah, and I'm sure it would be a huge thrill for him, too, because he's fun to go. We'll see. I'll watch with, like, you know, half smile, half, like, cringe.
Yep.
At least Tanaka probably won't be pitching because he's going on Sunday, so.
Yeah.
Anyway.
As he should be.
Right. Mitre of the Week. Matt F., go.
Carlos Beltran.
Oh, Josh.
He's hurt now, but, yeah, I know. He's hurt now, but even before that, he just wasn't hitting.
Yeah, he is. He's depressing. Just bumming everyone out. No, he's not even playing.
I would appreciate he not being hurt in hitting baseballs.
Yes. Well, we all want things, I suppose, as Greg once said.
Yep.
Matt P., your Mitre of the Week.
Mine is Mark Teixeira, unfortunately.
Yeah.
Because, he has been not good lately.
Yeah, he stopped hitting
diggers. He's kind of slowing down. Yep. But I think he'll turn it around. This is just like a momentary Mitre.
Yeah, I think so too.
I don't think it's a long-term Mitre.
I hear he's getting some good hitting advice from the base that he interviewed. I still can't believe that happened.
It's pretty amazing.
I like it's like, oh, Mark Teixeira has a new video. It's like, oh, what is this? Hi, I'm Mark Teixeira. I'm interviewing a base.
I like the idea of him, like, going up to people in spring training and be like, will you do this with me? And everyone said, like, yeah, and then he ran out of people. It's like, okay, Mark, we'll go to this base.
And they put a mic on it and everything. Like, I'm just going to proceed as if, like, you're responding to these questions. So, do you hope to be a home base one day? Anyway, Mark DeJarre, keep up the videos, but turn around the hitting. My meter of the week is Chase Whitley, because unfortunately he was bombed in another start. And I think the, as fun as those first few starts were and beating the Mets, that was exciting. But as fun as they were, I think the Chase Whitley starting pitcher experiment is over, at least for 2014. Maybe it's a sign that with some more stamina built up, you could do it again next year. But I'm fully comfortable with Shane Green taking his starts, because Whitley was destroyed in his only start last week and his previous start. 12 ERA and a 10-11 FIP.
Clearly burnt out.
Yeah, I think he's about the end of the rope. Speaking of the end of the rope, I mean, I'm not gonna make him Mitre because he was DFA'd and that's sad. But Alfonso Soriano had a 54.5% strikeout percentage. Granted, only over three games, but still, man.
Even after he's gone and he's retired, he'll always strike out in spirit.
Jim Miller, 19.11 FIP in one inning.
Yes, I was about to mention that.
He's terrible at baseball.
He pitched one inning and had a negative 0.1 WAR for the week.
Like, thank you, everyone. Hold here till Thursday, except maybe actually. Okay. Well, I think that'll do it for the Pinstripe Alley podcast, unless either of you have anything more to add?
Nope.
Okay. Well, you can follow us on Twitter at Pinstripe Alley. You can follow our gifts account. I just tweeted out a picture of Masahiro Tanaka picking up litter today, because he's a good citizen. And yes. You can follow that at PSA_gifts. You can follow me on Twitter at MearnsPSA. You can follow Matt F. on Twitter at MattF15. You can follow Matt Provenzano at Twitter at MPro6294. And you can like us on Facebook at facebook.com/PinstripeAlley. Rate and review us on iTunes. Always appreciate feedback, anything you might have to say. And our ratings boost our notoriety in the iTunes land, so any ratings, reviews you can give us would be much appreciated. And please submit to the tweet bag every week. I always put up the fan shot where you can put questions in, or you can just send them straight to us on Twitter. So, for Matt P. and Matt F., it is Andrew Byrne saying goodnight.